A church without discipleship is just a gathering. Hello and welcome to the Disciple Making in Community with Ken Brady podcast, where we believe the discipleship happens best within the context of a smaller group. This podcast is an ongoing conversation with church leaders and ministry experts from all over the country, and they're going to focus on important issues in disciple making through ongoing Bible study groups. I am Ken Brady. I'm Lifeway's Director of Sunday School, also a group leader at my church, an author, a blogger. You can find me at KenBrady, BRADDY.com, and I regularly release posts once or twice a week on group ministry. I've been a discipleship pastor at several churches, a 30-year champion of disciple making through ongoing groups in the local church. And I want to say thank you for listening to the Disciple Making in Community podcast. This podcast is a little unique. It's released in seasons with 7 episodes per season. So think something like Netflix. We focus on one topic for 7 episodes, but we approach the topic from different angles with different guests on each episode, and they get to share their wisdom and insights. Season 3, this current season, is focused on training group leaders, and this episode is the 7th and final episode in season 3. So if you haven't heard or listened to the other 6 episodes, be sure to go back and subscribe at Spotify or Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts, and quite honestly, about anywhere you can find podcasts. Just do our search for us under Disciple Making in Community. You'll find us, and you can listen to those other episodes. We've had some tremendous guests on this season, and you're going to want to go back and hear what they've got to say. Well, I love to live by the philosophy that none of us is as smart as all of us. The Bible even says, with many advisors, plans succeed, for lack of counsel, they fail. So you don't get to listen to me on the podcast. You get to listen to the experts that are out there doing it on the front lines. And I've got a couple of great guys here today that are going to help us talk about and think through adult training in the church. My first guest is Harlan Kaysen. Harlan has been a church planter, a church revitalizer — that's a big word with lots of syllables — a small church pastor. He earned both an MDiv and a PhD from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. That's my alma mater. So, Harlan, feel a connection to you there. He currently lives in Pensacola, Florida, a beautiful, beautiful town down there on the Florida coast, along with his best friend, he says, his wife, Ann Jeanette. And when I heard that name, I thought, what a beautiful — I've never heard the name Ann Jeanette. So Harlan, very unique there for your wife's name, but I look forward to meeting her one of these days. I love coming down to Pensacola. They've got 3 young children, and he currently serves as the Minister of Education at Olive Baptist Church, the church in which he grew up. So that's such a very special thing that most of us don't get to do, but his life has brought him full circle. The Lord's brought him back from some years of travel, and now he is back where he started. He's a lover of mountains and beaches. See, if I were to ask you, you know, where are you, a mountain or a beach guy for vacation? You go, yeah, both. And so that's pretty unique. You, normally we kind of stray to one or the other, but it looks like you're comfortable in either environment, right?
Comfortable in either, and privileged to live near, having lived near both. Boy. It's pretty nice.
Absolutely. Well, Harlan's a great guy. He longs for people to fall in love with Jesus, he says, and to see the world around them as completely his. That's a great outlook on life and ministry. Harlan, thanks for being here today. My second guest has been on the show before, and many of you will know Alan Taylor. Alan's the executive pastor at First Baptist Concord in Knoxville, Tennessee, and previously he served as the director of Sunday School and Church Education Ministries at Lifeway. He came to the position that he's in after serving 3 churches as Minister of Ed, and Alan conducts many Sunday school and leadership conferences nationally and internationally. Alan, I believe you've been down to South America and have invested in folks down there. You mentor, you instruct, you encourage Christian educators and Sunday school leaders. You have one of the best reputations out there. So thank you for being here. He's written a couple of books on Sunday school. He's written the 6 core values of Sunday school and Sunday School in HD. They are both on my shelf. I could reach them right here. He also equips Sunday school leaders through some DVD training series that he's put together. One, Sunday School Done Right. I've actually used that in one of my churches. Forward From Here, Sunday School Matters. I've used that one in one of my churches. And then The Inspired Teacher. So if you're needing some video training. Take a look at those. He and his wife, Linda, they've been married 44 years. Again, live in Knoxville. He bleeds orange. He's a huge Tennessee Vol fan. So, I don't even want to know. I don't really follow the Vols. I hate to say that. So I don't know if I should even ask how's the season. I don't think I'm going to do that, Alan. But if it's a good season, you can mention it, right?
Well,
he's got several grandkids.
If we're going to talk football, we'll eat up the whole podcast time.
Oh, okay. Well, let's know. He's got a coaching football background, so that would be a fun topic. Y'all've got three children and also three grandchildren. So kind of got that match set. So guys, welcome aboard. We're just going to hop right in. Most of these podcasts this season have just been, you know, right to the brim, you know, of our time allotment because everybody's had a lot to say about this topic of training group leaders. So today we get to focus on training adult group leaders. And here we go. So the first question that I want to throw out is this, it's for both of you. If you were to set a training agenda for the next, let's say 12 months. So we'll think from this point let's just think 2024. And if you were using a quarterly strategy, said you're going to meet with your people, you know, once a quarter, do you have four topics that you would say these are just must-haves? I've got to address this. We've got some people listening to the podcast today that probably don't have ongoing cadence of training in their church, and so your answers here may give them directional support and help them in their thinking about what do I do, what where do I start with topics for my group leaders. So I'll look at Alan first. Harland, I'll come to you next. But Alan, four topics. What do you think if you had four topics to deliver to your people? What would they be?
So I would arrange those in four categories. The first category would be what I call ministry-wide. I would want all of my workers together so I can cast a vision about what the purpose of our groups are, how that fits into the totality of the ministry of the local church. It would be more of the 30,000-foot view, if you will,
sure.
Of that. So I would do one ministry-wide. Second one, I would do age-specific training so that adults are getting trained, preschool workers are getting trained, children, youth. I would do age-specific training.
Got it.
Then my third would be position-specific. So if you're a teacher, you're going to be going to this room and getting trained. If you're an outreach leader, you're going to go to this room to be trained. If you're a care group leader, you go here. If you're a secretary, whatever positions you have, sure. I would do position-specific training. And then lastly, I would do stage-specific training. By that, I mean new teachers go here. Older tenured teachers go here. So if I was going to lay out a quarter, those would be the four categories that I would be looking at to do my training.
Yeah, that's good. I want to unpack that last one and have you talk about that one because that's a really great way to do that. And especially, you know, in your context where you're at a larger church, you probably don't, if you're an existing teacher, you've been doing this for a while and this is not your first rodeo to come to a training where you're talking about some basics that a first year teacher might need to know. You might be kind of bored out of your gourd, right? So that would be the time to really go and do some deeper level training with those folks that have more experience. And that's why you do that, Alan. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, you know, as believers, we mature over time. Mm-hmm. Well, the same is true with anybody in a service position in the church. I mean, certainly if you've done it for a while, you're more equipped, you're more skilled than you were when you first started. And so as there is a maturation of just sanctification in your spiritual walk, there's also a maturation in your service. And so, you know, let's take a new teacher. Their biggest question is Sunday's coming and I've got to survive this week. Right. They're not even looking long term. They're thinking week to week, I've got to get this lesson done and present it. Then I work on next week's. Well, we never lose that even if you're a tenured teacher, but nonetheless, that is their main focus. As a person teaches longer, I think you're able to get into more things like classroom management, leadership development, birthing new groups out of your group. But again, as a new teacher, you're just wanting to survive the coming Sunday.
That's right.
So I think you have to look at those stages they're in and provide some kind of training that would be very applicable to that stage of their service.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Harlan, you're relatively new. I mean, not new, but you're relatively new, you know, back at Olive. And talk to us about, you know, the people at Olive. And if you had four things that you could, you know, bring to them and, you know, topics, anything that you have on your radar right now that you would say, these are some must wins, some must talk abouts for the people in our church that are leading groups.
Yeah. So I'm 5 months into this position at Olive. Boy, learning from Alan as he talks, just I've got a lot to learn. I'm making my own notes.
Yeah, we all do.
but as I'm digging in, when I think about that question, I think about what are my groups primarily already pretty good at, and where do I see areas they can grow?
Yes.
Right. And so I'm spending most of the time now, and when I think about if I had four sessions in a year, what would I focus on? The four topics I think about, one is how does a group generate more, how do they grow leaders and grow teachers?
Right.
And so that we see people experiencing call from within the group to be the next generation of leaders, either within that group, they expand and grow, or, as they start new groups out of that group, that they are growing leaders to do that. So helping people, helping leaders, even in a Sunday school class, figure out how to help people see their own call in life and find experiences within the group to grow. Yeah, in that.
And that's twice you've Second used the word, Harlan, that's twice you've used the word call. Calling. I think that's a good word, isn't it? Alan, would you agree with that?
Totally agree.
That people that are in leadership, really, we don't talk them into that. The Holy Spirit prompts them. We somehow get to help identify them, and we realize they've been called. And sometimes that makes all the difference, you know, whether they stick around or not, or they take their work seriously or not. I think the issue of calling is a big one. Maybe we need to do a season on calling, but I love that term. So thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think it's call and then God gifts people for the acts of service. Right. Yeah. So growing leader, second, how to move mission and ministry to the heart of the group. Mm. So, some time spent on helping them be outward focused versus primarily inward focused or even Bible focused. Generally, I'm experiencing teachers who are very gifted in teaching and really good at presenting the Bible, but I would shape a lesson on how to teach towards obedience, help people to not just grow deeper in knowledge, but teach for seeing people experience transformed lives. And then the fourth one, and I'm spending a lot of time with groups talking about this already, is the idea of how to connect with guests. And I usually frame this in the language of how to make friends, not just be friendly.
Yes, yes.
Most groups are very friendly, but how do they actually connect with people?
Yeah. I actually have a book that I'm going to release next year, a year from about now. And the tentative title is Welcome Aboard, and it is about that. It's about biblical hospitality. Mm-hmm. It's about creating friends within the group and not just being friendly, because I think many of our groups are friendly. But when you get in them, you realize pretty quick, I'm probably not going to be making any, you know, deep, lasting friends in here. They already seem to be connected, and that's discouraging, you know, to new folks coming in. So that's what a great topic. So, what would you do, guys? Not all of our adult group leaders are going to be super excited about attending training events. I've actually had some in my ministries at the three churches where I've served that have either said or voted with their feet, not interested, you know, I know what I'm doing, you know, don't really need that kind of thing. So have you come up with some ways over the years to encourage adult group leaders to commit to being trained and to show up? Where have you found some successes? So please share that with us, because I have a feeling folks that are listening, pastors or discipleship leaders like yourselves on a church staff, run into that little buzzsaw, you know, from time to time. And you just have folks that just don't get it the way we want them to get it. And we grieve, because we want them to be there and be better, to be around their fellow teachers and part of the team. But they're just not that interested. So, guys, anything you can share with us here would be very helpful. What do you think?
I'm finding good experiences using gatherings as workshop sort of methodology okay. versus just didactic teaching. So I'll say this, I'm still riding a little bit of the who's this new guy wave. So
right.
I do have people come to my meetings and they're like, oh, we're figuring out if this guy's worth listening
That's
to.
That's right.
So I appreciate that. I had guys come in, we have a little bit of a Wednesday night lull in, through the summer in terms of adult scheduling. So I took advantage of that. I started here in June and did four meetings in July, Wednesday evenings, with any teachers, directors, anybody that would gather up or potential leaders. And I had one guy come in and do exactly what you just said, Kenny. He came in and said, I've been to dozens of these meetings. I've come to see if this is worth my time.
Yeah.
And thankfully, thankfully got good response at the end. But I go into those meetings when I think about doing workshop. People are living very hectic lives. They generally know, I think, not everything, every good idea that they could ever have about how to lead a class, but most of what they experience is just the difficulty of how fast the pace is and being ready for that next Sunday. So to create space that gives them time to do that. So I had those meetings in July, and the goal was, had people sit around tables, collect as groups, group leaders where there were enough to do that. Yeah. Sometimes they're meeting with other groups and presented, in an hour session, had about 10 to 12 minutes. That was actually, let me tell you something. And then question and answer through the rest of that they would talk around their table, sort of a self-evaluation regarding their own class, regarding the topic that we were dealing with, and then come up with an action plan. What's the one step they could take in the next month regarding that? And so I think that's probably my biggest thing is that I value trying to value people's times, right? That a meeting actually does matter to them in the end.
Sounds like you're making it highly relevant, but also very practical. So they've got some skin in the game, by coming. It's going to benefit them and their group. And, the fellow that came to you and, said, hey, I'll check it out for a while, see if it's worth coming. There was a fellow at my second church. They voted me in on a particular Sunday, but on that Saturday, the day before, they had me meet with all the adult group leaders. And one of the questions was, hey, if we call you tomorrow and we vote you in, what are you going to do? And I said, well, one of the first things we're going to do is we're going to start training. And this guy, his name's Milton. He was a senior adult then. He is still alive. He's a very old senior adult now, but he's been my biggest fan. But it didn't start that way, because he stood up in the meeting. He said, well, let me tell you something, boy. And it never goes good when that happens, right? He goes, let me tell you something, boy. If it's not really good, this church, we're not coming. And I said, well, just give me a chance. Y'all come check it out. But I think that's true. I mean, people don't want to waste their time, and they want to make sure it's relevant and all these. And that's one way to encourage folks to come, is that, hey, you're actually going to get something out of this that's going to help you in your ministry. Alan, you've been around for a long time. What do you do to get people to come other than just be Alan Taylor? How do you get them there?
Well, the first thing I do is when I enlist a new teacher, I enlist them that they will be committed to come to the training.
That kind of heads that off at the pass, doesn't it?
That's really good. Does. I mean, yeah. if you know, the argument I've made is, can you sing in a choir if you don't go to choir practice? Can you be a deacon if you don't go to deacon's meeting? Well, at some point, the largest organization in the church, which is carrying, shouldering the Great Commission for the church, ought to be getting together with its workers to plan its work. And so I enlist that way. And if they can't come to my meetings, then I don't let them teach. So, I mean, that's a hard line, and maybe some that wouldn't want to do that. But you really head the problem off before it gets started when you do it that way.
So, Alan, I'm going to chase a rabbit here, because I think this is here's a real world scenario. You come into the church and you inherit, as a pastor or a discipleship leader, you inherit a group of leaders, and you say, hey, let's do training. And nobody recruited them with that expectation.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
So they feel no pressure to have to come to Alan's meeting. How you got to get them there other than, you know, shaking a stick at them and, you know, prodding and poking and all this. But for that person that just says, don't think I need that, or no one signed me up to do that when I signed up to teach. What do you say to that person?
So here's the way I go about that. I have a certain enlistment process.
Okay.
And with my enlistment process, there are certain things that are non-negotiable. This one is negotiable for those that I have inherited because it's not their fault they weren't enlisted right. It wasn't their fault. Right. So my rule is for the people I enlist, I use L words, it's the law. You're going to start off this way. People I inherit, I'll use two L words. It's my job to lead them and love them to that position.
Yeah.
And so that's how I go about that. So there's several ways that you can help engage that. One is it's something that you guys both have already spoken to, but when you're first new, they usually want to come and hear you.
They do.
So when you have your first training session or two, make them zing. Make them really be so good that you're already setting a standard. You want to keep coming to these things.
That's right.
But for me, the church I'm currently serving, I came here, we had our first leadership huddle, and then COVID hit. Well, we can't meet. But one of the things that helped me was, though, looking back on it, I thought it was going to hurt me. But then I had to do video training. And more of them jumped on the video than came to my first meeting.
Wow.
So that helped me. It was convenient for them. So they saw, hey, this training's going to be worthwhile. And so now we actually have really good attendance at them. So I would say if they're not coming, video your training and send it to them on an email. And even, you know, if it's a 30-minute, maybe you cut it down a little bit. I have a friend that he sends out a video clip every week to his teachers. They're 2 to 3 minutes long, and that's how he does his training. He does it 2 or 3 minutes every week with a video via email.
Yeah.
So that's another. Now, I think at some point, I mean, this is just the old football coach in me, but at some point, you got to look him in the eyeballs. And so I'm for the video training, but I don't want to exclusively do that. But another thing that I've done, Ken, is I've actually had them to do some of the training.
I was wondering if you were going to mention that to get some of those holdout folks to come because you've given them a job to do at the training.
Yeah. I would ask them, what do you feel like you do best as a teacher?
Yeah.
And then I say, okay, at our next training, I'm giving you 15 minutes of the time, and I want you to teach the rest of them.
Great.
Now then they're getting buy-in because I've involved them. So
absolutely. That's so smart. So whoever's listening to this podcast, perk up and pay attention to that one, because that's one way you can get that recalcitrant person to come, take some ownership, and then become an advocate for it because they've had center stage for a while. They've been able to impart some wisdom, and now they get to help see the value of the training that's going on. I love that. That's huge. That's a big one.
Yeah. Ken, let me say one other thing.
Yeah.
One of the churches I served, I started to do away with the training. I was tempted to because, I'm new, nobody's coming much, and I'm thinking, do I need to keep putting the time into this?
Yeah.
And I finally said, yes, I'm going to keep. It's the right thing to do, so I'm going to keep doing it. Well, eventually it built up, and it was very, very strong. And we did them every month except December and June. So we was doing 10 a year at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it built itself up to the point that it sold itself. I didn't have to anymore. It literally sold itself. So I would encourage anybody that's struggling to hang in there. Make sure that you're prepared. You ought to be as prepared for your training as you expect the pastor to be for his sermon. That's what God's called you to do. So you be prepared and you show up and you deliver the goods regardless how small the group is. And eventually word will get out. It will start growing and it'll grow to the point that it will literally sell itself because you got the big momentum on your side at that point.
That's right. And if it starts small, let's don't apologize, say, well, it's just, three or four of us here today. And, I don't know where everybody else is, but, we need to be excited about those that came.
Correct.
That's right. And make them feel like they've made the world's best decision by being there for the training. Not that, we wish everybody else was here. It almost, denigrates them a little bit for coming. So
yeah,
yeah, that's great. So let's talk about some mistakes. And Harlan, let's come back over to you. You know, obviously, you know, we're humans, we make mistakes, and there are some mistakes probably we can avoid when we are commit to training group leaders. Any potholes that you see out there that we ought to avoid when we're creating training for our group leaders?
I think one of the two things I try to think about a lot. So coming back to Olive, I grew up here, left after I graduated college. So that was in 93. It's gone 27 years and moved back 2 years ago. So, you know, being back, now I'm leading whatever we have, 45 Sunday school classes or so. Many of those teachers, I mean, they were my youth teachers and RA teachers back in the day. One of the guys I work with, he's a director of a class now. He was one of my RA leaders. And so, I'm the guy in the room, and I've got ministry experience. But when I walk in the rooms, I hold on tight to the idea these people, they're at like 70 years of ministry in this context and culture, mm-hmm. the people that I'm leading. So I may have, I may have the printed sheet of the 10 things they need to know today, but there's a lot of ministry to be built on. So it's not about trying to bypass or deconstruct what's already here. It's trying to build on the foundation of good ministry that's already occurring. I think that's one. I think that the second one is, in my own efforts to try to think longer term. And for me, I try to think, 2 to 4 years versus 3 to 6 months. So,
yeah.
So try to shape my lead, my week, with some creative thinking and sometimes meetings that, and then in those training events as well, try to think about, what are the nudges now that'll matter in 3 to 4 years, in these classes, not just what can we bring about very quickly.
I love the idea of playing that long game and planning out and thinking about the future. I think that's huge. Alan, what about you? Any potholes and mistakes we ought to avoid when we're scheduling and delivering training to our folks?
Yeah, let me just give you some that's very obvious, but
yeah,
is just schedule. Sometimes we don't schedule them at the right time. I had a minister call me recently, and he used to want to start training, and he said, Alan, when should I meet? And I said, well, I can't give that. I don't know the context of your church, but I said, here's the answer. Yeah. You got to, the question you have to answer is, when can you get the most of them there? Bottom line is, that's when you need to have them.
That's
and
right.
So, schedule it at times you can get the most people there. Secondly, I would say budget for them. Sometimes you're going to need some money to, maybe you're going to feed them. Maybe you're going to have snacks. Maybe you're going to give them some resources at or whatever. But you need to make sure that you budget. And let me just say one thing about that. Two churches I've served, I had a hard time getting a budget for my training. And the reason is they were churches that had never done training before. I never will forget sitting in a finance committee and one of the finance committee members saying, well, Alan, we've never spent this kind of money before, and we've never had this line item before. And, that's all he knew. And so I said, well, listen, y'all have called me. This is, part of the vision I have to get us where we need to be. And I'm asking you, at least for this 1 year, underwrite me. And if it don't work, then next year don't. In fact, this was back in 91. So I'd asked for $10,000. And I literally broke it down. I just didn't pluck that number. I broke it down. Here's how I'm going to spend it. I want them to know I've got a plan. Well, anyway, I begged, and they felt sorry. They gave me the money.
And I bet you spent it too, didn't you?
I spent every dime of it.
You bet you did.
Yes. And in fact, with my own staff, I tell my staff, I want you to save money where you can, but when it comes to our training, I want it spent. I want to know that you're using it. Well, anyway, the following year, it came out in the state paper that we were the 9th fastest growing Sunday school in the state. I was able to take that article back to him, and I said, folks, here's why the training. We didn't spend $10,000. We invested $10,000.
There you
go. And it produced. So anyway, I would just say make sure that you budget. I would also say a pothole can be sometimes we can be so, and I mean, I have to guard myself with this. We can be so content oriented But folks, at some point, be inspiring. Inspire your people. Leave them, you know, with the water pistol to charge hell with, if you will. Now, every training session can't be that way, but be inspiring. People want to be inspired. And then one other thing I would say is occasionally make sure you do something in your trainings to really appreciate your people and to love on them, even if they're not to the level we want them yet. These are people that's putting their time, their effort into it. At some point, they need an attaboy. And that in itself is inspiring.
Is it an attaboy or is it a gift? What are you thinking there, Alan? Is it something physical, tangible?
Sometimes it is. Sometimes, well, let me just tell you, at least once a year, I bring my pastor in. Currently, we do six leadership huddles a year. And
are
one
you
of those.
Every other month?
Basically, yes. It don't work out exactly that way, but basically. Okay. And so one of those months, I'm going to bring my pastor in. And I'm going to say, Pastor, love on them. Let them know how much you appreciate them. Folks, I'm telling you, appreciation goes a long way. I mean, even I've been in ministry all my life. And somebody pats me on the back and says, Alan, that's a good job. That's inspiring. And nobody can inspire the people like the pastor can. I mean, so I bring my pastor in once a year just to do that.
I love it. Love it. Well, guys, let's just pretend that there is somebody listening to the podcast and this idea of training is kind of new. They've really not had a rhythm of that in the church. So what would you advise that person to get that training rolling, get that ball moving, you know, get that train going down the track? Where do they start? What would you say to that guy that really, he agrees with this, that we need to do this? Where would you say, hey, these are the first couple of baby steps to take?
I'm pretty simple in this, and I don't know. You know, I think we all have this, if you're in the role that we're in, you have this heart to see people trained, right?
Yes.
You know, I think for training meetings, it's where we often struggle. First step is not what to say. It's what's the venue, how to get people there. So it's picking that meeting time. My answer to the question is actually probably a step or two back from that.
Okay.
I'm working. So if, where I don't find people participating and I'm trying to get things going, I've got to build a relationship of trust with them. Sometimes what I'm doing to do some of that is gathering people up that have a commonality of Jesus, mission, and burden. And so I did this recently with, we have multiple areas in the church that have, you know, in terms of the people they're targeting or have a mission towards is single adults. So that exists in college, young professionals, it exists in the divorce community, it exists in, there's a older, mature adult class, widows and widowers. And that there are various leaders in those various classes. We said, hey, let's all come to my house and let's pray and vision and eat together. And just experience the commonality of what we're experiencing. And then out of that prayer and vision, then what I find is you get some camaraderie, you know, sort of cross class. You get, people ask the natural question, which I'm always wanting them to ask is what's the next step, right? How do we get to strategy? And then you go, strategy. Well, we meet, you know, once a month on Wednesday night and we talk about strategy and this week it's going to be this. So it's, I think it's creating, I mean, if you go again, I think this is really early step, but trying to get yourself in the room with the people that, and experience that burden with them and let them know that you're on the same pathway because people are burdened about it. Even if they're, the fact that they exist in leadership in a class, they face that, you know, every Sunday having to have a lesson to teach.
They do.
But they're doing that because they have a call and a burden. Can they do it better, do it more strategically, grow leaders in the midst of that? I'm sure they can. They need some help to do it, but you've got to gain a voice. Another place I see that for me, again, sort of in a pre-step, is particularly with young and newer teachers. This works better. This doesn't, there's places at all of this doesn't work very well because, but where you have a homogenous curriculum that you use church-wide, which we don't, we have you know, pockets of that. But if you're preparing along the, alongside, you know, if I'm preparing because I'm going to be in a particular class that Sunday, if I reach out to a couple of other teachers that I know are going to be teaching that same lesson, I know Lifeway puts out the podcast and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of places they can go for resources. But if I know I'm already working on the lesson, to reach out to a couple of newer teachers and go, hey, I'm preparing my lesson. Let me tell you how I'm seeing it. I want to hear how you're seeing it.
Yeah.
Again, it's not the big room. It's, it's not gathering people up, but it's, you know, it's that personal touch to go, hey, we're doing something together. I can learn from you. You can learn from me.
I love it. And so you mentioned Lifeway podcast that go along with the curriculum. There's a lot of other things. So if you're listening to the podcast and you're using Lifeway's ongoing curriculum, either Explore the Bible, Bible Studies for Life, Gospel Project, go back and listen to episode number 2, because we talked about in that episode lots of free and or almost, you know, no cost resources that Lifeway produces that will help group leaders experience training. And so, Alan, what do you think? What would you say to the guy that wants to get it going and is just kind of stuck right now? He doesn't know exactly where to start.
So maybe a good starting point would be to have a banquet, an appreciation banquet for your workers. I mean, us, you know,
Baptists and food, you know,
they go together. Yes. It's like peanut butter and jelly, is it not? So, you know, do an appreciation banquet, feed them, make it a really nice event, and use that as the kickoff to say, hey, we're going to start doing some more things like this, and here's when the next meeting is or whatever.
Love it.
Another thing, the churches I've served, I've asked my pastors, I said, there's two things I need you to do for me when it comes to my groups, my Sunday school, whatever you might call it. Number one, I need you to champion the cause. You've got more influence than anybody in the church. I want to tap into your influence. So, you know, have him to promote it some. Secondly, I've had my pastor, I said, I need you to champion the cause, and I need you to cheerlead my workers. That's the reason I bring him in once a year to do that.
Right.
And so I think when the people see the pastors behind it, again, always leverage, if you can, always leverage your pastor's influence. He's got more than anybody in the church. And then the other thing is something that I'll just play off of that Harlan said, and that is relationships. I'm telling you, leadership is directly tied to relationships in a local church. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I've done for years, I tell my staff to do it. We all have a budget to take people out to eat. The best vision casting I have found is not in the banquet hall. It's sitting across the lunch table, somebody having a hamburger with them and talking about it. And so, you know, stop and think about it. If you just did one lunch a week with a worker in 50 weeks, you'd touch 50 people. You know, that doesn't build it real fast, but it does build it.
And well, so, you touch 50 people, but when you consider all the people that are in their group that they lead, you may have just touched hundreds or more.
True.
By those weekly gatherings. That's great.
Right. But at least you've touched 50 workers to come to your meetings. By just being one-on-one with them. And so, you know, I had a worker years ago that he was not coming. And so I literally sat down with him and we talked and I told him, I said, his name is Tony. I said, Tony, I need you at my meetings. And I know you've taught a long time. And I even said, Tony, maybe what I'm doing at the training sessions won't help you. Now, deep down, I thought they would, but I just said, maybe what I'm doing the training won't help you. But I said, Tony, there's a lot of people that needs this and I need your influence. And by you being there, I mean, they're saying, well, Tony's one of the best teachers here. He don't come. Why should I? And I said, I really need you there for just your influence. And I mean, literally, he paused and he looked at me and he said, Alan, you're exactly right. I apologize. I'll be there from now on.
Wow.
So anyway, but these one-on-one lunch meetings is my point, can really help build that vision over time.
Yeah. No, that's so good. Well, guys, one last question, and then we'll wrap up this entire season. How about that? So this is it. I mean, it all comes down to this. Is there a resource, a book, a conference, a blog, a webinar, something that you would say to the people listening to this episode to help, you know, move that? I'm going to use your football terminology here, Alan, since you're a former football coach, move the ball down the field, you know, to encourage training amongst our people, or to give that pastor or discipleship leader some new, you know, fuel in the tank? What kind of a resource is out there that we need to know about? What would you point to?
So, you know, Ken, I'm preaching to the choir with you when I'm saying this, but for those that are listening, Ken knows when I was at Lifeway, one of the things I started to doing when I first went there was start meeting with discipleship pastors, ministers of education across the country. And I would just ask them, here's my question. I'd bring them all together. We'd meet at Chick-fil-A or somewhere and have lunch. And I'd say, Tell me, what is your greatest challenge? By far, the greatest challenge was, they said, we need more training resources. Hmm. So I go back home, and literally one day I pull out a legal pad, and I just thought, what topics ought to be covered if we're going to train people? And I just started listening to topics. And I don't know how many I ended up with, probably close to 20. And I thought, what I'd like to do is supply them a resource that if they train once a month, we could give them a year's worth of training.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where the training video, Sunday School Matters, came from.
Right.
From that experience. And so I picked the top 12, I thought, out of my 20 topics that would be best. And then I thought, now, you know, who's some good people would be good to do this? And so different right. people do the different sessions. And so that's where Sunday School Matters comes from. And I would recommend that because you're listening from about a dozen people across the country that have given their lives to this. I think it's a great training resource.
Can I give a plug for that? Because when I was at my last church, a small church in the Nashville area that had never had a history of training, I went for introducing them to quarterly training, and I used Sunday School Matters, that video series, once a quarter, and that became our 3-year plan to walk them through, and it worked great. They loved it. It was about 30 minutes of teaching. They filled in a notebook. We did some discussion afterwards. We'd fed them lunch right after church on Sunday, so it was like a noon to 2:30 type training, and Alan, it was a difference maker for our church, so I appreciate your leadership in getting that resource out right. there to
well,
the
thank
church.
Thank you for that testimony.
Sunday School
okay.
Matters. Yeah, it's great. Harlan, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, there's a stream of information that I'm just got my toe dipped in, and just learning every day all the resources that are out there. So I've learned some stuff today just listening to you guys. I was introduced to your books, Ken, as soon as I got this job. My assistant knew you
my
very
super
well.
Fan, your assistant. Yes, she's awesome.
She had a couple of your books on my desk when I came in. So it was to my shame I didn't already know them. But I think it's a world of information. This is a little bit silly to say. I'd say Google is your friend. You know, most of what we experience is not. We're not the only one in the world to ever experience it. So, if you're wrestling with something, seek out counsel, a friend of yours, a mentor, or Google, see what somebody else is already saying about it. The other resource I'd point to is again, I mean, kind of leaning back into this idea of people in your church have been doing ministry a long time. Depending on your size, you've got people that are good at various things, and to lean in on them in those training sessions.
That's
to
true.
Say whose class is doing this well.
Yeah.
Right. And so you're not bringing an outside voice. You're bringing an inside voice and presenting, a homegrown model of somebody celebrating that success and letting them teach the other folks about what's going on.
Yeah, that's a great approach. Well, guys, that's going to wrap us up for season number 3 of this Disciple Making in Community podcast. We're already in the process of thinking through season 4. Which will release sometime in mid-2024. But I look forward to having more conversations with both of you down the road as you get to share wisdom and insights with our listeners on a whole new set of topics as we just think about discipleship that takes place in these ongoing groups. You may call it Sunday school at your church. It may be life groups, connect groups, fellowship, adult Bible fellowships. But whatever it is, it's connecting people to the Word, to one another, and to biblical community. And it's just the best place that I know to see disciples grow. And that's in those rooms, those smaller groups outside of the worship service. Make sure if you don't already subscribe to the podcast, just go find us at Spotify, Google, Apple Podcast. Do the search. Go back, listen to seasons 1 and 2 if you haven't already, or pick up this season and listen to these earlier episodes on training your group leaders. Thanks for being a part of this episode. I'm your host, Ken Braddy, and until next time and until next season, remember that a church without discipleship, it is just a gathering.